16 on the huddle clock. Now they overload the left side. Trips outside the numbers. And they give it to Desmond. He's on his way up the right sideline. 50, 40, 30, 25, 25. Touchdown, Desmond Reed.
College football and the University of Pittsburgh is perfect. The Panthers are 6-0, and you just heard the voice of the Panthers, Bill Hillgrove, Hall of Famer, broadcast legend, our partner. And you can see Bill on the radio via our video at kdkradio.com. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Larry. Yeah, that was quite I think the execution of that play was perfect, because what they did was bring the tight end, I think two of them, plus a receiver from the right side, which was the wide side, to the short side on fourth and one. And I guess, you know, the California defensive players are thinking they're going to try to draw us offside. And bang, they snap the ball, and he goes against the grain to the wide side where they didn't have numbers, and he doesn't lose any foot races. That was something to watch.
There was no question. Once he crossed the line, he was gone. And they survived by a missed field goal. They would have had 2 minutes left, would have been down by a point, but the field goal was no good from 40 for the California Golden Bears, so the Panthers survive and remain perfect. Little oddity this season with scheduling, Bill. As you know, there's three Saturdays where Pitt will not be playing. This is the second Saturday. Then they have Thursday night at home against Syracuse, and then, because of that, they'll have another Saturday where they're not playing football. So a little oddity in an off week, but it always helps a team, especially when you're right at the halfway point of the regular season, to get healthy.
Bye University is always a high point in your schedule, and so that can only help, especially, you know, since they had the left guard and starting left tackle injured, gives them more time to try to get back. In the meantime, their depth was tested, and I think the lesson learned in that Cal game, as you get into the meat of the ACC schedule, everything is going to be a dogfight, and don't expect anything else. I look at Syracuse numbers. Kyle McCord, the transfer from Ohio State, a fine quarterback. LaQuint Allen Jr., their running back, almost 5 yards a carry. They can score points. They also, on defense, Larry, two things to note. Number one, red zone touchdowns. They're less than 50% for the opposition. So they get tough in the red zone. And what was the other thing that I wanted to bring up? Oh, yeah, 30% on third downs, which is near the top of the conference. So, you know, they're going to be a handful.
A good team finds a way to win when things don't go your way. For the first time, this offense that is averaging almost 500 yards a game was not the same offense we had seen with Eli Holstein, for the first time not getting accolades from the ACC.
Give Cal a lot of credit. Their defense is probably better than most people think. How they lost that Miami game, you scratch your head. But that's college football, and, you know, forget the history, forget the stats. You know, every game takes on its own life, and that took on a very dramatic life, and fortunately the Panthers emerged victorious.
So, again, an off week for Pitt next Thursday at Acrisure. It's Syracuse. This is the one team they've played consistently since the 50s, year in and year out. And, Paul, I'll let you ask Bill the number one question in this city.
Mike Tomlin tipped his hand a little bit on Tuesday, and then we found out yesterday that Russell Wilson took the first snaps at practice. Who's the Steeler starter on Sunday?
Well, there's a reason that Russell has the C on his jersey. And I believe, and I don't know this for a fact, but I think he came here as damaged goods. And I think that, you know, calf injury with the sled and all that, I don't buy into that. But he's finally healthy. And I think even at age 36, as you get into the meat of the schedule, and let's face it, you know, this schedule backloaded with division games, and I think those are the ones you have to win. I think he's the answer. Now, I could be wrong. I think Justin Fields has done an exemplary job. And you know what? I think maybe part of the solution, I can see Arthur Smith using Justin in the red zone. And I'll tell you why. You know, you got to have a spy on you. If you don't, if he gets loose, he's in the end zone. And we saw that last week. So I think with teams having to put a spy on him, that's one less receiver that's covered or double covered. And I think that could be options. We'll wait and see.
And the Jets are improved in some ways. They had their coach fired. Aaron Rodgers is their quarterback. He just got a familiar receiver who's supposed to be healthy and really good. So how do you see the matchup Sunday night with the New York Jets?
I was surprised that the Jets are a slight favorite. But, you know, despite their travails, they're a pretty good football team. How much Devontae can get on the same page with Aaron, you know, they're old buddies. Maybe they won't take long. I don't know that that'll be the key matchup in the game, but I think it'll be a good one. And I think, you know, it'll be another dogfight. So it'll be fun to watch. That's for sure. Russell Wilson is an excellent play action quarterback. And I think that plays into the hands of what the Steelers try to do with Najee and, you know, and the running game. So I think that'll be something to keep your eye on.
And Bill, how about the oddity of having two Sunday night games at home within 3 weeks and then Monday night football at home next week?
Makes for long days for Steelers fans, but I give them credit. They show up, and they showed up in Vegas last Sunday. Wow. To the point where you saw the end of the game when Mike Tomlin bowed to the crowd like, thank you, thank you, thank you. They were a factor and a good factor and a help for the Steelers. So the Steelers Nation never fails to surprise.
Yeah, Coach Tomlin even tipped his cap. Here's what he said Tuesday about the fans.
Man, what do you say about that support that we had in Vegas? Steeler Nation is special. We don't take it for granted, man. We really appreciate it. Not only in terms of the support, in terms of attendance and the crowd noise and so forth in play, but I just thought it was really cool 20, 30 minutes after the game when we're going through the arena on our way to our buses, man, a lot of Steeler Nation was still in the stands and cheering for us and so forth as we were going to our buses. And so that relationship is a real thing.
And the atmosphere will be electric Sunday night at Acrisure. And Bill, before you go, Paul, Monday night, Bill received for the third time from the Saints and Sinners organization the Man of the Year Award. Bill, you're having a year. Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Well, thank you very much. And Larry, you were excellent, and that was a fine program. And I thank the Circus Saints and Sinners, Bob Prince Tent. They put on a first-class show.
And we want to help the charity that's close to your heart. It's coming up here in weeks, right?
Yeah, we got Santa's Kids. And also, AFTRA will honor me tonight at the Buy-In with their annual spoof. You know, they put on a nice show with all the local broadcasters. And so I'll be there. And, you know, it's, I guess when you get a lot of awards, it's a sign of your age.
That's tremendous.
You stick around long enough, people notice you, you know.
Off the record, that is the annual event that all the local, they got media people, they got politicians, and yeah, you're going to be part of the show. You are part of the show.
I think so.
Well,
unfortunately.
Have fun tonight,
they'll
partner.
They'll probably make a little fun of me, but that's fine. All bets are off.
It's all good. The fact that you're the one that told Newt Rockne to go ahead, throw the ball. You know, a lot of people don't know that. All right, Billy, have fun tonight.
Thank you, gentlemen. Always great to be with you. H2P.
Bill Hillgrove. Big K Morning Show every Thursday. We welcome via video on the radio. KDKRadio.com, by the way, to check out Christy Graber, food editor with Pittsburgh Magazine. Christy, good morning. You're sun splashed, I can see.
I know. I don't know what's happening here. Usually my place is really dark.
Yeah, we're going to have a great stretch of weather. So the weekend is upon us, and you have seven things to do in Pittsburgh this weekend.
this weekend. That's a lot. October is going by really fast, so check out our list of spooky things to do in Pittsburgh this weekend. Events include horror movies at Row House Cinema in Lawrenceville, including the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, which celebrates its 50th anniversary this year. There's also WYEP's Hellbender Ball, where the city's best musicians perform full sets of some of their favorite artists, like Fleetwood Mac. You could also see Sweeney Todd on stage at the Strand Theater in Zilly. And the sibling band Hanson, do you remember M-Bop? They play the Roxy in theater. And the brothers are in their 40s now. So that's pretty scary to think of.
Yeah, they're doing, what, two nights too?
Yeah, that's...
It's that scary in and of itself. I get it. So, the heartwarming story of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre again at the Row House Cinema in Lawrenceville. Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk about Mancini's Bread.
This is a family I really love. Mancini's Bakery just unveiled its latest bread art masterpiece, and it's an ode to Beetlejuice. So bakery co-owner Nick Mancini Hartner spent a lot of time creating this toast with the most. It's 4 by 4 feet and it weighs 140 pounds. You could see it at Mancini's Strip District location through Halloween or until it starts to crumble because it is bread. He kind of bathes it in olive oil every now and then, but it won't last long. So his art is fleeting, but it's really good.
Yeah, Mancini's, that's one of those iconic things of the Berg. All right. This week in Pittsburgh history.
Another, Pittsburgher doing well, getting big accolades. On October 16th, 2005, 14 days after the death of American playwright and Pittsburgh native August Wilson, the Virginia Theater on Broadway was renamed the August Wilson Theater. The New York City Theater marks the first Broadway theater to be named for an African-American. Wilson made his Broadway debut as a playwright with Ma Rainey's Black Bottom in 1984. His best-known work is Fences, which received 4 of the 6 Tony Awards it was nominated for in 1987. He also won a Pulitzer Prize for the play. In Pittsburgh, his childhood home and the August Wilson African-American Cultural Center memorialize his legacy. So he's still making an impact on Pittsburgh today.
You know, when Fences came out, I had a TV show on KDKA, and the producer said, hey, we booked August Wilson. I was like, who's that? Not knowing, he was in studio, and I was sitting next to this legend to be. And what I do remember from sitting down with August Wilson was just how genuine and gentle and humble he was. Yet his stories are very, very powerful. So check that out. It's all right there. PittsburghMagazine.com. Christy Graver, where are you going to be this weekend? What do you do?
I'm going to get pumpkins this weekend. I think we're going to go out to Yek's Farm. It's out kind of like in Beaver County. It's a really small little place, but it's really cute. So we need to get pumpkins.
Well, Mother Nature's going to cooperate. We'll talk to you next Thursday. Have a great weekend.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Larry.
Food editor Christy Graver.
As we mentioned in our 8:30 update, an independent panel is recommending a complete restructuring of the Secret Service. This is related to the Butler rally assassination attempt. We've just received a CBS News special report.
CBS News special report, scathing findings on the Secret Service and the failed assassination attempt on former President Donald Trump at a rally in Butler, Pennsylvania in July. Correspondent Nicole Skanga is in Washington.
An independent panel appointed by Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas identified what it called systemic issues within the U.S. Secret Service and said without fundamental reform, it believes another Butler can and will happen.
President Biden ordered the bipartisan group to conduct its review, and members are calling for a shakeup.
Among the panel's recommendations to appoint new leadership from outside the Secret Service and a restructuring of the agency, refocusing operations and personnel around its presidential protective mission.
The agency's leaders have acknowledged they were notified about the gunman before he pulled his trigger. CBS News special report. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
That's an eye-opener there, Larry. They're calling for a shakeup at Secret Service. This is much more than we've heard in previous evaluations and reports.
Well, we knew there were communication failures, but for them to suggest they need to make sweeping reforms. Maybe it was more than we expected, but 52 pages. We'll have more details coming up on News Radio KDKA. Meanwhile, we have some news about Nippon Steel and U.S. Steel. Pittsburgh Business Times reporter Paul Goff reported that Nippon Steel will sell its joint venture in an Alabama steelmaking plant to a partner. And here to talk about what could be next is Phil Kirpin, president of America Commitment and Unleash Prosperity. Phil, welcome to KDKA.
Hey, my pleasure.
So what is the meaning of this development? Is this a dead deal long-term? They just spin in their wheels, or is there a chance after the election that they might find a way to make it happen?
Well, it's interesting because they've run into massive political resistance on both sides of the aisle. And normally, when that happens, you don't have much of a path to success. But the economic case for this merger is very compelling. And so you've got a situation where, you know, one of the major steel producers in the world thinks this is the right strategy for us. It's the right way for us to get really world-class workers that we can combine with our technology and our know-how and our capital and really compete with China that's trying to dominate the world steel market. And the fact that they're willing now to divest their Alabama plant, the big joint venture they have there, I think it's interesting. I think it's a big vote of confidence, actually, for Pennsylvania steel workers as opposed to, you know, U.S. steel workers more generally. They think that where they can really, really make their mark in the world steel market is, moving into your region. And they're even willing to give up the foothold they have in the U.S. market down in Alabama if that can move the approval forward. And so, look, the politics are still challenging, but, you know, they think this is the right business strategy, and they're committed to trying to do whatever they can to make it move forward. I think it's another vote of confidence in sort of the compelling economics of the deal, and whether that overcomes the political opposition, I don't know. But maybe when we get past, to your point, when we get past the election and things are a little less politically dominated, the economic merits of the deal may get it through.
Yeah, the carrot they've dangled here is, hey, we'll keep the headquarters in Pittsburgh and we'll dump $1 billion into the Mon Valley Works. So I know that people have said, well, that's just press release and rhetoric. However, let's say that is the case and they hold them to it. I'm not sure why the steelworkers would be against that, because what's the alternative?
Well, I mean, the alternative is that there's a fire sale acquisition by Cleveland-Cliffs, and they basically strip U.S. Steel for its assets and probably shut down most of its facilities. And, you know, I think the union leadership really likes this idea of one big steel company, Cleveland-Cliffs, and we can negotiate with them, and we can kind of just set all our sights basically on one company. I think the leadership likes that. It's terrible for the rank and file workers, though. It really, the logic of sort of a fire sale deal when you have kind of a premium price being offered and all of these commitments in terms of investments and keeping the headquarters and everything else, the Nippon offer is a much, much better offer than what Cleveland Cliffs has on the table. It's better for the workers. It's much better for the shareholders. It's, it's night and day. I mean, the only issue, of course, is, they're an investor-owned company. They're not a government-owned company, but, they're headquartered in a foreign country. So this is why there's been so much hesitation. But you look at what Japanese companies have done in the auto industry. It's been hugely positive for the communities that have had them there. And Japan's one of our closest allies. This is the thing I don't get about this whole, it's a foreign. Well, they want to do this because they want to take on China. They want to do this because they're allied with us against our actual geostrategic, opponent when it comes to, the military implications and everything like that. And, I know the world changes and maybe someday Japan won't be our friend anymore. So, okay, but that's when you step in and do something with the national security laws. You don't do it, at a time where it doesn't make any sense. And so I think the logic of the deal is very compelling. And the fact that they're now willing to give up the U.S. plant that they already have in Alabama tells you that, they really, they're not blowing smoke. They really want those workers. They really see a lot of value there that they think they can unlock.
Phil Kirpin, President of America Commitment and Unleashed Prosperity, thank you for the update. And we'll obviously be following this story. And the big news will probably come after the election. You're right. Thanks so much, Phil.
My pleasure. Have a good one.
Dower, the details behind this really amazing esplanade, this development that's going to be on the Ohio River past to Rivers Casino. And we'll talk to the man behind it all, Lucas Pyatt. In the meantime, Paul Rasmussen has brought to light this report, an independent panel investigating the attempted assassination of Donald Trump in Butler, July 13th, a 52-page report.
And it echoes the previous reports that talk about securing the building that had the clear line of sight to where Trump was speaking, and then the communications problems and the ability of the Secret Service and local law enforcement to talk to each other, just basically talk back and forth.
And the panel faulted the planning between Secret Service and local law enforcement and said the Secret Service failed to ask what was being done to secure the building, and also cited the fact that there were no two separate command posts, creating a divide of the flow of communications.
And then they went into the Secret Service culture. They painted a picture of an agency struggling to think critically about how it carries out its mission, especially when it comes to protecting Trump.
And the panel said agency personnel operated under the assumption that they effectively had to do more with less. The report said the additional security measures taken to protect Trump after the Butler shooting should have been taken before.
There was also a back and forth, they say, between the Trump security detail and Secret Service headquarters about how many people were needed to protect the former president.
They also faulted some of the senior-level staff who were involved in the rally for what they called a, quote, lack of ownership. In one example, the panel said a senior agent tasked with coordinating communications didn't walk around the rally site ahead of time and did not brief the state police counterpart before the rally or how communications would be managed. It cited the relative inexperience of two agents who played a role in security July 13th.
And so the panel has concluded, Larry, that the Secret Service needs new outside leadership, a renewed focus on its core protective mission, and the panel also expressed skepticism that the agency should continue with the investigations it currently conducts.
And the panel was made up of Mark Phillip, Deputy Attorney General under President George W. Bush, David Mitchell, who served in many state and local law enforcement roles in Maryland and Delaware, Janet Napolitano, Homeland Security Secretary under President Barack Obama. And we'll have more details coming up.